Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting PFGWM. Or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com. Or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, the hosts of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
Good morning and welcome to Investing Simplified. However you may be listening to us today, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your phone calls and your questions. You can also visit us at investingsimplifiedradio.com if you wanted to ask a question there. Good morning again. Happy Saturday. I am Bo Caldwell, CFP, with me in studio. Today is Chuck Price.
Good morning, Bo.
Good morning, Chuck, as well as Kevin Stege of Baker Colson CPAs. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
It's good to see you out of hibernation, Kevin.
Oh, yeah. I've been awake for a few weeks now.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know because he was too busy, you know.
I was too busy trying to play golf.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That is true.
But it's good to see you out and about and see you're still alive.
Yeah, and doing well about that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hibernation will do it to you.
That's right.
Well, yeah, because he is the tax animal, so I think we need to change that promo, too, rather than the tax investigator.
We do.
The tax animal have some sort of like a, you know.
Grizzly bear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some sort of bear.
Or at least it stopped at the animal and not like Yeti or donkey or something. So.
Well, you know, there's some remedy out there for all the listeners that are hearing us ramble on here. They can just pick up the phone, give us a call, and ask us a question, because otherwise we could bore you for an hour. So pick up that phone and give us a call of things that you've been thinking about, because what really makes our show work is we're live, we're on the air, and we're here to answer your questions. So pick up that phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595, toll free 877-733-1011. And boy, I got to tell you, for people who don't catch the show or will want to go on the website, we've also been doing a podcast on thatcast.com. And so a lot of people could, if they don't catch the show during the week, or if you do catch the show during the week, you might want to also check out our weekly podcast on thatcast.com.
Yeah, it's a good place to come for information that we may not be able to get into on our live show, as well as dive into little topics that folks have questions about, but maybe they don't want to ask on the air. You can also download the podcast of this particular show, our live show, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere that you get your podcast. That's on there is Investing Simplified, if you search it out there on your podcast provider.
Yeah, and the great thing is if you do that and there's something that's not covered or something that you want covered, you can contact our office directly or send us an email I think it's
ask@pfgwm.com,
and we'll answer it on the show, or we'll answer it on the podcast, one or the other. And if you give us your email, we'll even send you an email and answer it.
Absolutely. There's lots of ways to get your questions answered, but the biggest one, like Chuck mentioned, pick up the phone this morning, give us a call, ask those questions that have been keeping you up at night. We have at least, you know, most of the answers here. I don't know if we have all of the answers, but, you know, for those that have been listening to us for a while, we're happy to tell you when we don't know the answer and we have to find out for you.
Yeah, one of the great things is we may not know the answer right off the top of our head, but for one sure thing, if we've got a week, we can find it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, we've had several questions that have I don't want to call it stumped us, but have been, you know, something that we haven't dealt with before and, you know, had to come back with it. One of those I wanted to just to reiterate, because I have gotten that via email, a question again, the sustainable investing options that are out there and the Christian values investing out there. And I have found a couple of fund providers that do that. If you work with Chuck and I in our office, we can get you access to them, but you can also find them other places. One of them is ARIS, A-R-I-S, mutual funds, and they do both. They're a money manager that does both the Christian values investing. They have a strategy that's Christian values investing, as well as a strategy for sustainable investing. The other big sustainable investing player is called Calvert Mutual Funds, or there's an ETF out there that is ESGG. So you go ahead and search those out. They're not right for everybody, but if folks are looking for sustainable investing options or Christian values options, those are some options that are out there.
You know, Bo, that brings up a subject that we talk to people about every single day. You know, there's a lot of market volatility going on right now. And if you're an investor and you're a long-term investor, you got to have a little patience right now, because we're having a real whipsaw market. I mean, last month, the month of May, which normally is an okay month, but boy, this month, the market sucked. Was down over 7, and I think about 7.5 the S&P. Mm-hmm. Dow was down also terrifically. So year to date, if you take a look at the S&P, year to date right now, as of the close of Friday, the 31st of May, the S&P is up 9.78. But don't forget, in 2018, the S&P was down 6.5. So if you look at, go back the last 17 months, the S&P is up about 3.5. You know, so if you look at your portfolio and you see it's up or down a little bit, if you're within that margin of error of around 3% for the last 18 months, you're doing right at market. Now, if you look at the Dow is a little bit different, because the Dow is only up 5.59 for 2019, but in 2018 it was down 6.25. So it's actually running negative over the last 17 months. And so when you look at your statement, you have to evaluate what is your long-term goal of what you're investing in. Not only short term, but long term. And I think we got a caller on the line there, Bo.
It looks like it. You had a question on the line?
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, I've got a question about my father-in-law's stuff that's going on.
Okay.
He's almost 90 years old. I'm kind of reading off of a list here because I couldn't remember it all. He's almost 90 years old. His health's not the best, but he's doing great. And it's about a house sale. It's finally going to sell within a week or so here. And when he bought the property, it was an unimproved lot. He did it with cash. And he's a builder and stuff. We built the property up. He did it all with cash. So he's got no records for capital gains. And he's going to get approximately $500,000 or so after closing. He's going to take it by check, probably put under his mattress for now. he's got rental property, Social Security, IRA money. It gets approximately $70,000 a year. And his wife passed away almost 30 years ago. And they're the only ones on the deed. And then he'll present the death certificate at the closing. And now the daughter is on his bank accounts. And she does all the bills and the paperwork with him monthly and stuff. And he's has lived with us. Should he look into a trust or something? Is it going to be a problem getting a check before closing? Should he do a trust?
What are the values of his rental properties?
I have no idea.
How many of them are there?
There's three houses on this property.
Okay, and what are they generating?
Well, it's let me see. I had that down someplace here. It was approximately $60,000, I guess, a year.
Yeah, so probably minimum, you're looking at those three houses, probably $400,000 of value.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But now, that's not on the land he's selling, right?
He's not going to sell that rental property,
okay.
The house.
Yeah.
But the issues are with no capital gains or anything to show against this $500,000 in a check. Is that the best way for him to take his money for that house?
Well, I think that's going to be really his only way of taking it. I mean, at this point, he's turning it into cash. He'll have to figure out the tax consequences. Mm-hmm. I don't know that a trust buys you anything in terms of tax purposes, and for estate planning purposes, not even for tax. You may have an asset succession plan, and you want to use a trust for that. But for tax purposes, it's pretty well lined out. The 1031 exchange is kind of off the table at this point if they're closing next week.
Right. Okay.
So it looks like it's going to follow a certain form.
But Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong. Was this his primary residence?
It was.
Okay. So he has $250,000 worth of exclusion from that gain. So if we're thinking he bought it, just hypothetically, let's say he bought it for $0 and is selling it for $250, there's only a capital, or selling it for $500, excuse me. Mm. There's only a capital gain on that $250. Now, if he also had costs when he bought the property, which I'm sure he had to pay money for it, right?
He's got no records for that anymore.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. That's where the issue comes.
That's what
from.
I was thinking. Yeah.
I would tend to make your best estimate for base and come up with some basis. If you got audited, you probably wouldn't win because you don't have any documents. But reconstructing basis in good faith as best you can is typically a decent way to go. It's not that this has any bearing, but especially showing a lot of gain, it's probably and it's reasonable. That's probably a good way to go.
Okay. Right. And, at $250,000, let's say worst-case scenario, you can't come up with any more basis than zero. Like, say, worst-case scenario, we're at zero. It's $250,000 worth of gain. You said he's at $70,000 worth of income. So I believe, and I'd have to look, but I believe that's still in the 20%. Or is that still in the 15, or is that up into the 20%?
A single person, he's maybe probably in the 20.
Yeah, so we're talking 20%. Is what your tax liability is on that 250, which is 50 grand, which is a lot. But it's not, you're not like losing the entire amount.
Yeah.
Plus 9% Oregon.
Right. Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't forget Oregon in there, but still, it's a lot better. Yeah. It's a lot better tax wise. But I would think for the future, what a living trust does, and I don't want to play attorney here, but I will, what a living trust can do is help avoid probate. And also provides privacy for the family and the heirs on what's actually passed, for the next generation. So a living trust to me, and I have one, is it gives me the privacy of passing my assets to my heirs without being public. The second thing it does is it avoids probate, and it makes sure that the assets are distributed the way you personally want them distributed.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, though, your father-in-law is probably, he's 90 years old. He's probably pretty set in his ways.
Oh, and then some.
And then some, yeah. And so to get him to change could be very, very difficult. But you could, if you got the right attorney, you could set up with him a codicil on the property. And again, there you could set a transfer on death on that property, and that would avoid probate. It wouldn't be, to me, as good as a living trust, but it would help the family from a standpoint of passing that without any probate.
And this, we're talking about the rental property.
I'm talking about the rental properties. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. We're hoping that he can somehow spend his IRA money down and get. With his daughter, is she going to have issues with any leftover IRA money? Or?
No, because the IRA money is going to. She's the beneficiary on the IRA.
I'm not sure at this moment. Probably, but I'm
okay.
Not
sure. Well, I would double check and make sure she is, because if she's the beneficiary on the IRA, of course she has the opportunity to take that IRA. Does she have any other brothers or sisters?
No, the brother passed away, and father-in-law inherited my brother-in-law's monies and property. So he paid a chunk of change on the IRA money and everything.
Okay. Well, she can do a stretch, and whatever's left in the IRA, she can draw that out over her lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So that, just make sure she is the one and only primary beneficiary on there.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that answers everything. So it doesn't do any good for too close to closing to fix the house sale. So I guess that's...
Yeah, and really, you know, if you consider the fact that the new capital gains law, and I think it's what, about $36,000 of capital gains is tax-free, he's really looking at the taxation is going to be on about $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you can, like Kevin said, if you're, you check with the contractor what it would be to have built his house back in those days, and some contractors have been around could tell you, mm-hmm. and give you an estimate, have them write you up an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
And like Kevin said, the IRS, I found in dealing with the IRS, if you're honest and you come to them and you say, hey, look, here's the situation, we don't know, this is our best guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've had some clients do this on stock because we mm-hmm. were unable to find out for sure when they bought it. And said, hey, we did all this research and here's the evaluation. The IRS is not going to nitpick with you over an evaluation that you went and spent time with.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for people who are trying to cheat them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're going to them with honesty. You're going to be okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
You
Thanks
you for the call. Call.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's a great question, though, because a lot of baby boomers who have elderly parents or even grandparents, but who have elderly parents are going to be facing this. This is going to be a daily common occurrence for people to face. So hopefully if you're listening out there, you maybe took some notes because it could happen to you.
Yeah.
Well, a big thing, we talk about this a lot with our clients, with the trust, the value comes in there. And the reason, for those of you who don't know, that Chuck asked about the values of the rental properties, is at a certain point, if you have real property that's valued over a certain amount, it makes a lot more sense to have it go through a trust rather than go through a will. And a lot of people think, well, I just have property. Why the will tells who it goes to, and I have that all taken care of. Yeah, your wishes are going to be followed, but your heirs are going to have to go through probate. And after a certain amount of assets, that could cost $25,000 or $30,000 to go through the probate process. And why not spend a couple thousand now to have the trust set up, to have everything set up properly? Then you're saving your heirs not only the headache of probate, but the cost. Because that can significantly impact what you leave behind.
Yeah, the hardest thing is when people pass away, if things aren't organized, it not only adds a lot of stress to your family, but it becomes very, very difficult to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so as much of that, if you're capable now and you're of sound mind, this is the time to do it, take care of it before something like that happens, because then it's all going to be handled the way you want it to be handled. And I myself, if I'm going to pass, you know, I would like to say I'm going to live forever, but that doesn't happen. And I want to make sure when I do pass, my assets are distributed the way I want them distributed, not the way somebody else wants them distributed.
I'll just make one last comment on this whole situation that the caller called in on, and I'm just going to tighten the screws down from a tax perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I would typically, at this stage of the game, I would have wanted to have planned this whole transaction beforehand. There's a lot of unknowns in the dialogue here still. The gentleman sounded like he was living with somebody else, so that mm-hmm. triggers... Was he living in the house two of the last 5 years?
Sure.
So those things need to be fished out. That could change the whole tax picture if now all of a sudden $500,000 is taxable instead of $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would factor in he's clearly over $1 million in assets. I would factor in estate planning purposes. I would have considered the age of the taxpayer being age 90. Potentially this was an asset they didn't need their cash from and would have been better, highly appreciated, and let it have stepped up basis.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, and you know, you bring up a really good point, because we also don't know, although we do know she's passed away for 30 years, but they've had the house for 40 years, so half of that house would have got a stepped up basis 30 years ago, right?
Good point. When
so
she passed away,
that would have lowered the cost too. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that could be, you know, and I'd really recommend the caller to get a hold of Kevin and to pencil that out, because it'd be well worth the time to have a professional tax person sit down and go over that and help you with it and prepare it for when and if you ever got audited.
I'm sure one of our qualified staff at Baker & Coulson would be glad to take a look.
I'm sure they would. Just, yeah, Kevin will... give out his contact information later in the show. And that's a good, I think that's a good spot for us to take a quick break here. And we'll be back after the break with the tax investigator segment put on by our local tax animal. Thank you for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin, 503-417-9595, or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. And again, we welcome your calls, 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. And today on the Tax Investigator, I am going to, I have two topics and I'm still deciding which one to start with, but I think we'll go with just a general informational item here. I find this interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about the tax gap. And the tax gap is the difference between what the IRS should collect in a year from taxpayers, and I don't know how that's calculated. I'm sure there's economists and people that are much more dialed in than I am on all of that stuff. It's what the IRS should collect in a year versus what they actually do collect in a year. And the latest numbers on the tax gap, and the reason I bring it up is because it brings up some interesting perspective on our tax system and kind of how it's evolving and where it's going in terms of enforcement and compliance and that type of a thing. But the latest numbers, basically we're looking at the IRS is about $460 billion short per year for what they should collect. And that's broken down into several categories here. The main one, and it kind of makes sense, is from people overstating their deductions. In other words, taking more deductions than they're allowed, therefore pushing their income down and not paying as much as they should have. And by overstating, that's an accountant term for it can be intentional. It can be a mistake. It could be taking deductions that you thought you were allowed, but you weren't. So there's many ways to overstate. It's a very general term. So overstating your deductions or understating your income. And understating your income can be you received cash for some services and cash is easy not to report, or maybe it's easy to have not properly accounted for and maybe you forgot about it or what have you. I mean, there's many different ways. Some businesses are cash heavy and you know you have cash income. Other businesses are like, oh yeah, that client paid me $200 in cash and that was the only one maybe you forgot. So over reporting expenses, overstating expenses, understating income, it accounts for about $400 billion of the $460 billion tax gap. So that's a good, so you know the IRS is going to be looking at those issues going forward, and that's kind of the segment I want to, kind of the area I want to look at. But a couple other ways that we have a cash gap is, and this obviously makes sense, is non-compliance by people just failing to file their tax returns. Just for whatever reason, maybe it's an estate, because those are always difficult sometimes for people to get around to filing. Maybe someone's been in poor health for years and they just don't file a tax return, or maybe you're just a chronic non-filer and it feels good to be looking over your shoulder every day of your life. And
do they have any estimate on those numbers on how many dollars are out there of people who've never filed tax returns?
For this particular year, they figure failing to file is about $40 billion of the tax gap per year.
Good gravy.
Yeah.
So all the rest of us are paying for those people.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And then the other difference, about 20, it's actually $30 billion. I'm doing big roundings here.
Sure.
Is people who file their taxes but just don't pay for one reason or another. They have spent the money. They have lost the money, they reinvested it in their business, and they don't have the money they should have paid. So this is truly a cash basis analysis. So and some people get on the installment agreement and, you know, pay over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. There's a number of reasons. Typically, when you're reporting income, most taxpayers are cash basis, and you should at some point have seen that cash to have been able to pay your tax bill. So usually it's a matter of either planning and not having, or budgeting and not having spent it right, or something came up, maybe a severe health issue, and it was just, you know, this money is being spent to save my life. Sure. I'm going to choose that over taxes and I'll deal with that later. So those scenarios come up too. Oftentimes, if you run into that, it's probably good to chat with somebody to see where's your best source of cash. Usually the IRS isn't your best source of cash. But believe it or not, I have one of my more successful businesses. Well, actually, I'm just going to back off of that. I'm just going to sometimes you just got to be careful on. I'm just going to back off that example now that I think of it. So
the point is, if you owe it, pay it.
Right.
This is true.
Well, that's a big thing. You and I have talked about that on the air, and it's a rude awakening a lot of times for people because they know of the tax filing extensions. So they're filing extensions, but they don't realize that even though you're filing an extension, you still owe that tax on tax day. You don't owe it on the extension day.
That's right.
Right. So a lot of people think, I filed the extension, I don't have to pay it, or I'm working on it, my CPA is working on it. Sometimes, I mean, I'm sure you've had the experience with that where it takes like a year to get all that. You know, people are even going past extension time because they can't figure out, they've got all these moving parts. And like you said, they've got cash receipts here and something over there and something, all of that stuff. And so it takes forever, but they don't realize, oh, I've been accruing interest and penalties this entire time because you owe it on tax day.
That's right. There is a case sometimes where maybe in a business situation, you would rather not pay your taxes during the year and use that money for generating more business. And it was cheaper to have paid the penalty at the end of the year than to go to the bank, pay a high interest rate and a high amount of points to get the loan. But you have to be on top of your ducks if you're going to be doing that. Is that right? On top of your ducks? Have your ducks in a row. On top of your eggs? You gotta be on top of your game.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. I don't think you should be on top of ducks or eggs.
You better have your numbers correct.
There we go. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, let's back off of being on top of the ducks. Oh, well. So, but one way the IRS is going to, in the future, technology is going to really help them and help, I'm going to say taxpayers in general, help the general public, because really when the tax code is structured, we need to pay the lowest amount of tax that we are legally responsible to pay according to the tax code, but we do need to pay that amount because it's what makes the wheels turn. And I think some of our Social Security issues are related to the aggressive stances, and some of them legal, some of them not legal, of saving money on self-employment income. The small Schedule Cs, the big Schedule Cs, the businesses, the self-employed businesses. There's a number of scenarios out there, and saving on that, you know, everyone's subject to the income taxes, you know, we'll say 15% federal or maybe 22% federal, 9% Oregon, but then you tack on 15% self-employment tax. Now you're pushing 40% of your income as a small business is going out in taxes, and that's a real slap in the face. And when you've worked so hard, you've taken risks, you've hired employees, you're dealing with all that stuff. And now so you're looking at a lot of ways to save money. And I think that pressure has, I think it's part of the Social Security issues. But one way the IRS is going to be looking at the underreporting of income is through advanced analytics. I'm sure they're going to be tapping into AI type stuff to start analyzing, and I know they're already doing it, especially with algorithms. You're in a certain type of business. They know that a convenience store in this section of the country, in this location, should receive X amount in credit card sales and X amount in cash. And if the credit card sales are reported to them, so they know that portion of the equation, and all of a sudden your gross income equals your credit card sales, they know you're not reporting cash. You're prime for an audit, and they know how to reconstruct that. And if you don't have proof of what your cash is, then they're going to determine what that is for you. And so things like that are becoming pretty commonplace and, pretty automated too. So, I mean, you don't need a high level of staff person to determine something like that. Right. So
feels a little bit like Skynet to me. That's a little worrisome. You know, it's a Terminator joke, Chuck. Oh. Don't worry about it.
I got it. I do.
I missed
it. Hey,
that.
By the way, the new Terminator movie's coming out, by the way.
I saw that. I think it looks, yeah. They're bringing Sarah Connor back.
Yeah. Yeah.
That looks good. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah.
But
and that's it for the.
That's very interesting to me that they're cracking down on that to see the big difference and gap in when people are not paying. I mean, hopefully that's none of our clients, right, that are missing out on
Oh no!
Yeah, I think one other area just to finish off the topic is going to be blockchain. When you have one transaction supporting another transaction supporting the other side of a transaction, and you have thousands, millions, billions of transactions all supporting each other in the future, we're going to know whose income is whose. So
who's doing what? Who's actually bringing in what? No, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. And that's why they call you the investigator, right? Because you're digging down, or maybe animals dig too, right? Are we talking about, the bear digging down in the cave?
This is more like burrowing away from danger.
That makes sense to me. If you have a tax question, if you have a finance question, if you have an investing question or another estate planning question, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595. We'd love to talk. We'll continue to just, yammer on about things that interest us, but we want to make sure that we're yammering on about things that interest you. So pick up the phone, ask that question that's been keeping you up at night, something that you've been worried about. Chuck, you mentioned in the open today that the market's been down about a little over 7% over the last month. It's been a pretty rough go. There's a lot of news and a lot of volatility out there, and I wanted to talk kind of about your thoughts about where it's going from here. I make the joke, it's on our desk on our east side office, we have a little crystal ball, so it's really fun to point out to people that, hey, I've got this here. So if they can read it, they can tell me what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know. But I have a feeling that we've got some more room to go down before we hit a bottom here in this volatility we're having right now.
Yeah, I think the two main things right now that are driving the market down is the potential tariffs with Mexico, mm-hmm. for sure. And the tariff war we have going right now with China. And, the thing is, it's kind of like sitting down with a person that's 22 years old, just got their first job, and you're sitting and you're the HR person for the 401k, and you're sitting down and telling this 22-year-old how they need to put some money away for retirement. And when they see somebody 65, they see somebody who's ready for their death. They don't see that picture of that 40-year spread. And the real short-sightedness of the economy right now is we have been getting screwed in two fronts from economically in the United States. One is our trade with China, the over amount of money that we're paying for the trade with China. And at some point, somebody has to stand up to them and say enough is enough. Plus the fact of all the intellectual stealing they're doing, which is just crazy. And, being that we're on the show and we get music, we know all about how that is because the music industry's done a great job to protect their intellectual properties. We got a good question here. It looks like Dave's got a question about estate planning. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, and your question?
Yeah, we have two children, and my wife and I are in our early 60s. We're just looking towards, towards the point where our children will inherit our estate, and we're just trying to figure out a good way to do it equitably between the two of them. So we have a house that's paid for, and we have some mutual funds and things like that. So one child would really like the house, for instance, that's the main thing, and the other child is not so much interested in the house. But the one who is interested in the house really can't afford to pay for what half the value might be at the time. So we're just trying to figure out a good way to be able to be fair to both.
Well, Dave, what is the value of the property, your home? What's it worth?
It's about $450,000.
Okay, and the other assets that you have, what are those worth? In other words, what would be your estate value, not counting your home? That would be your retirement accounts, any investment accounts, any savings accounts. Any stocks or mutual funds?
Probably $100,000.
Okay, so all total, you're looking at about $580,000.
Yes.
Well, are you and your wife in pretty good health?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, the statistical numbers when you're in your early 60s, one of you is going to be here till probably about 92 to 95.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking out here 30 years of the value of those assets. And obviously, over the next 30 years, that home value is going to go up. Your mutual fund value is going to go up. Do you have pensions for retirement, or is your mutual funds your retirement plan?
I have a pension.
Okay. Okay. And is that enough to live on with Social Security?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay. Okay, good. Then it's reasonable to assume that these assets are going to continue to grow. Also, how old are your children?
33 and 35.
Okay. Also, hopefully they're working. And they're accumulating money as well?
Yeah, the younger one is just ready to graduate from university and about ready to start a new career.
Nice.
And the older one is has been working for about 3 years full-time. You're right. They're both on a good path.
Okay, and so, I mean, this whole situation is going to change 10 years down the road. So when you and your wife are in your early 70s, and then you're taking your retirement plan, and you're going to have this house, your kids are going to have 10 more years of work underneath their belt, 10 more years of saving and accumulating themselves, and you're going to have 10 more years of value on the home. Is the home paid off?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So you're going to have 10 more years. So 10 years from now, that's probably going to be a pretty easy solution to do. and dividing up the assets.
Yeah, and as a stopgap, you know, if the proverbial bus were to take you and your wife out and your kids needed to divide up the assets as they are now, and there's not enough liquid assets for the one son to take the house and the other son to take the liquid assets, you know, the one son to buy the other out, then you may structure a provision in the will that would say that the one son would buy it from the other over the course of 15 years or right. 10 years
well,
or
here's the thing. Ostensibly a mortgage, but instead of paying the interest to the bank, you're paying the interest to your family.
Brother,
which is,
exactly.
Yeah, because if you own the home free and clear, you got a $480,000 asset. If you divide that in half, that's $240 each. You've got $100,000 of funds. So the one that doesn't take the house, the one that does take the house, is really only going to have about $190,000 they got to pay back to the other child, mm-hmm. the other sibling.
With the half.
So
mm-hmm.
it'd be very easy to get a loan on a $480,000 house for $190,000.
Yeah, to get a home equity line of credit.
Yeah, home equity line of credit, and just state in your will that that's what's going to happen. And they've got to finance it and pay off the other sibling. And that, mm-hmm. that becomes a very fair deal. And it would be an easy thing for them to do, provided they had a job, had a right. source of income, which you said they do. And to make a $190,000 loan on a $480,000 house, every bank in the world would love to do that.
Right. Especially because mm-hmm. it's 480, you know, we have 480 now, but, you know, like you said, 10 years, 15 years from now, it should be, I no guarantees the crystal ball looking right, but it should be worth more than it is now.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be probably worth 600 and up for sure in 10 years. So the thing is, I think you're doing the right thing by doing the planning right now at your age. I think doing a will and an estate plan with an attorney mm-hmm. right now makes a lot of sense. I think it's great that you're communicating with your kids, because so many people do not communicate with their kids, unfortunately. And, and you found out that one kid does want the home. I've found through my almost 50 years of doing this stuff that most kids don't really end up wanting to live in their parents' house, because for a couple, one is the house and the date stuff. The other is the memories. Because it's very hard to do. It's, you know, and that's the other part of it. It's you've lost your family, and you grew up in that house, and you lived in that house, and now you're living in it, and they're not there. That's a very hard thing to do. So you got a rare situation, but it's a very easy remedy if you just sit down with a legal person, mm-hmm. Get it all set up. This is the perfect time to do it. You guys are in your early 60s. It's a great time to be doing the planning.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's the direction we were looking. But just the fact that the way that you laid it out, with we've got 30, you know, possibly 30 more years to build on this, is a great way to look at it. You know, we've been looking at it like, what if the unthinkable happened? You know,
yeah.
Where would we be? And so it's nice to be able to look at in the long range, too, that it's only going to get better as far as our children.
Well, here's the other thing. Do you and your wife have life insurance, too?
No, we don't.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that there's a thing, too, that you could always look at it for a short gap. If you wanted to protect the children for that $190,000 shortfall, you could get some reasonably low-cost term insurance, maybe for the next 10 years. To provide for that shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
something else. And you said you're both in good health.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
we're doing well.
Yeah. So in your early 60s, you can get almost $1 million of coverage for like $400 a month or whatever. So, I mean,
mm-hmm. that you need that much, but just to give you an example of how cheap it actually is.
Yeah. You wouldn't need that much, but you can get it for pretty reasonable.
Mm hmm. What do you think of using that $400 a month, and rather than do the term insurance, invest that into some mutual fund?
That's what I would rather have you do. Absolutely. because I think that realistically, you both are going to be here for another, you're both going to be here for probably another 18 to 20 years. And one of you for sure is going to be here for 20 to 25. So, yeah, absolutely. I'd rather see you take that money and put that money into some some retirement assets.
Well, very good. I really appreciate you guys. That's good advice.
Yeah. Great. Hey, thanks, Dave. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, great. That's a great question. A great example of starting planning early and the issues that come up with dividing up your assets, and just kind of hits home the idea that speaking with a professional estate planner to get yourself set up. So we're going to take our last break here. We will be right back with Investing Simplified. You can still pick up the phone. Give us a call, 503-417-9595. Thanks for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future, and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, here's Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thank you for listening to us today. Thanks for making us part of your day. We do appreciate it. Thank you for your calls and for your questions. We do appreciate those as well. If you couldn't tell, we are three gas bags. We are happy to continue to talk about whatever piques our fancy, but we want to make sure we are bringing topics that are relevant to you. We've had some great questions. We were just talking in the break, Kevin and Chuck, about the importance of working with a professional, whether that's with your planning, with your retirement planning, for your estate planning, or for your tax planning, just because there are all these items out there, and there's only a certain amount that a robo-advisor, tax planner gets back to my fear of Terminator and Skynet. Obviously, I hate robots, but there are certain, boxed in, here's how to do the couple of different things. But a lot of times there are ideas and options out there that you may not know about. And as Chuck is wont to say, what you don't know can hurt you. So make sure that you're working with a professional. I think it's really worth the value of working with a pro. So it looks like Ron is on the line, who has a living will versus a living trust question. Ron, are you there?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. So my question is, I heard you talk about a living will. I don't know if a living trust, is that the same thing?
It's slightly different. So a will, it's a good question. And the terms, depending on which attorney you're working with, where you're located, the terms are not... A trust and a living trust are pseudo-interchangeable. The difference, without getting too into the weeds, has to do with whether it's a revocable trust and whether it's done while you're still living. A will is not necessarily a living will. It's just your will is the document that says, this is what I want my assets to do. This is what I want to have happen. And most of the time included in that will be your medical power of attorney, your medical directives, and your financial durable power of attorney. So that's a set of documents that's your last will and testament. You've heard those terms before, and basically it's your last documents that pass everything after you pass away. Utilizing a will, people have to go through probate. Your beneficiaries will have to go to court. They take your will, they take your death certificate, and they go into probate court, and they have to go down here in downtown Portland to, if they're in Multnomah County, and come down and make an appointment with the court and get a court order in order to have all the assets transferred to your heirs. So a bank won't take a will. A bank won't take just a death certificate unless you have a transfer on death on there. A living trust bypasses that. So you hear Chuck mentioned, bypassing probate. A living trust, what it does is that actually sets out, here's how everything goes. It costs a little bit more than a will, generally, too. So that's the other big difference. When people are getting things set up, a will, you'll hear a term, simple will. You're going to hear living will is a term I have heard before, but it's a will and testament. It's basically, it's your documentation of what you want to happen, but it's a little bit less complex than a trust. A trust is more complex than a will, but incorporates all the things of a will, but has extras on there. Sort of like a square rectangle situation. If you think about it, a square is a complex rectangle, but not all rectangles are squares. That's kind of the way that a will and a trust compare.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
Yeah, you betcha. That's a great question. I mean, hopefully that made sense, yeah. Right?
So some jurisdictions, a living will can be the advance directive for medical purposes.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's just a, so I would differentiate a will and a living will that way, but definitely, I'm sure I'm not playing attorney here, so we'll just leave it at that.
Right. Yeah, trying to give as much info as we can without...
I think really, Ron, the two things I think that might be of most concern to you is the first one is your assets. Sometimes your assets, if you're sitting down with an attorney, your assets will totally dictate that you need to do a living trust or you need to just do a will. And so, in sitting down with a qualified attorney, which none of the three of us are, you could sit down and very quickly decide which one would be best for you.
Okay, that's what I will do then.
Yeah,
perfect.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Good question.
Yeah, absolutely. It would fit in perfectly with what I was just saying before he called in. Right, is working with a professional, making sure you make those decisions, because as much as we know, as much as I know enough to be dangerous, I tell that to clients all the time, I know enough to be dangerous on the estate planning side, and we know rules of thumb and we know basics and can give you ammo to go with. But there's no replacement for it. It's, you know, that says in your promo, right? There's no replacement for experience, right? So having an estate attorney who knows what they're doing. And if you need an estate attorney, if you're looking for somebody to work with, send Chuck or I an email, ask@pfgwm.com. We have attorneys like Taylor, who's on the show with us quite often, have other attorneys, other areas around town here in Portland or outside of it. We don't make any money, referral fees or anything like that. We're not partnered with them. We just have established trust with them. We trust them implicitly. If I would trust them to handle my estate planning, that's the basis refer people.
Here's the thing, Bo. You know, today in this world, everybody wants everything right now. You know, they want to go online. They want to do their estate plan online. They want to do their living trust online. And I think back to a client that I had years ago that went and did their own trust, and they had a complex estate. It was worth millions of dollars. And I tried to explain to them that, you know, you really need to spend a couple of grand, go to an attorney, and do it the correct way. And unfortunately, they didn't. They did it right out of the box, off the internet. And the end result was they had the wrong kind of trust. The end result cost the family $24,000 additional estate tax that if they had done it correctly, they wouldn't have had to have paid it. And so all I'm saying is, if you're going to do planning, do it intelligently. And save yourself, save your family money in the long run by doing it correctly to begin with a professional.
And this certainly isn't a sales pitch. I'm a big do-it-yourselfer. I enjoy many aspects of that. I really do see this, especially at certain times of life, is a great use of money. If you're not pushing over $1 million or you don't have huge transition issues with kids and stuff, maybe not so much, but give us a call and we can chat about it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
That's a good point. Give us a shout, send us an email, say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. What do you guys think? So I wanted to mention before we go today, it's worth mentioning, Chuck and I do have a West Side location. We have an office over in Tigard, Southwest Portland. If you'd like to come see Chuck or I, give our office a call at 503-253-3000. Send us an email at ask@pfgwm.com. We'd love to sit down with you, give you a complimentary second opinion on your situation. No obligation to meet with us. We do have a couple of books as well. Chuck's book, Investing Simplified, as well as your 10 retirement mistakes. Give us a call. Come down and see us. We'd be happy to give you one of those. Kevin, if people want to come see you, how do they get a hold of you?
Baker-Colson.com, 503-666-5569.
Perfect. Thank you for listening today. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We've been Investing Simplified. We're happy to take your calls next week. We'll be back. Have a wonderful weekend, and God bless you all.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.